We're back here on Wrestling Weekly, Doc Young and Les Thatcher. I'm going to sing to the music, Les. Dun, 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 dun. Okay. We've got our featured guest on the line. His name is Lance Storm. He runs Storm Wrestling Academy up there in Canada. Lance, it's great to have you on the show.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Well, that he does a little more than that. When I first, his first trip into the States, or at least as a wrestler, I think, was when he and another guy, that a name who we might mention and you'd recognize, called the Thrill Seekers, came to Smoky Mountain.
Oh, yeah.
And that was Chris Jericho. And now, I was thinking tonight we're going to have Lance on. I thought, my God, I must be getting old. I was there when he first got started almost, and now he's winding his career down according to training. And I should be ready for the grave, I guess.
You're in trouble when the young guys start retiring.
Boy, you ain't kidding.
What wanted you to retire? What was the main factor?
There was a lot of factors, really. The main one at the time to step out of the ring, my back was getting bad, and hadn't been properly diagnosed, so it was still nagging at me and taking a lot of the fun out of being on the road. I was also, you know, far from thrilled with my lack of direction creatively.
Mm-hmm.
So it just really wasn't the reward that you usually get from being on the road. I didn't have a direction that intrigued me. My body was killing me. And so I started looking to other options. I was looking into either being a road agent, and they offered the training job, and I thought, you know what, this might just be the ticket.
Excellent. What is the name of your website? Because I wanted to talk about that.
You can use either stormwrestling.com or stormwrestlingacademy.com.
Stormwrestling.com. Yeah, Les, have you read some of his commentaries over there?
Yes, I have on occasion, and that's Lance talks highly of East Coast wrestling, independent wrestling promoter. I thought that's been needed, and you know, Lance, we were doing a promo with somebody on here, and we were talking to him, and Doc was saying, well, you know, and I said, you know, it's the norm. With independent, it's just that it does. If it happens to somebody that's got some semblance of a name, you know, and then you can afford to come out and say this, where some guy who's just getting started can't do that.
Yeah, and actually, I just posted today a new one about a group out of Montreal that I had a wonderful experience with. So I'm all for putting over the guys that are honest and try to put out a good show. And if we can spread the words about the guys to avoid, all the better.
Absolutely, sounds good to me. I really liked a few of your commentaries, especially the ones about using kayfabe names and things like that. Because a lot of people, I go in a chat room sometimes, and I just watch what people say, especially wrestling chat rooms and things like that. And they'll be talking about The Undertaker, and they'll be like, oh, Mark Calloway this, Mark Calloway that. I guess it's Les's influence on me, but I feel like that's disrespectful.
Yeah, I do too. It's one of those things where I've known the man for 5 years, and I don't call him that.
You call him Taker, right?
Yeah, exactly. I call him Taker, or if we're in a real friendly setting, Take. But you know, I've never used his real name.
So I'm pretty much the same way. I mean, I've known Jimmy Jacobs for a while. He was our guest just a little bit ago on the show. I've never called him by his real name before.
Well, you know, I'll look at sometimes and see somebody's name written down, a name that's unfamiliar to me, and I'll say, who is that? And they'll say, well, that's so-and-so. I think, my God, I've known that guy 40 years and never knew he had another name.
Exactly.
Well, you know, I think that's, there is, you know, a line where you've got to, you've got to respect that. And that's been muddled. Well, Lance will tell you the same thing. It's been so blurred over the last 20 years that it's really hard to determine where it starts and where it stops.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that I use it in everyday life. It's like I don't address people by names they haven't introduced themselves as.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? If I meet someone on the street, I might call them, you know, Mr. Whoever, but it's like until they, you know, sort of answer back in their first name or whatever else, I won't use it.
Right.
And it's the same thing with wrestling. It's, you know, there's certain guys that I'm friendly with that, are, you know, prefer using their real name, and I do, and others don't. And it's just whatever they, you know, want to be referred to is the polite thing to do.
And you, of course, are Lance Storm.
Yes, well, that's the thing. It's easy with me because my first name's the same either way.
Right.
You know, if you want to be, you know, Joe Smart Fan and just say, hey, Lance, it's still, you know, basically the same thing, so it doesn't matter too
exactly.
much.
Exactly.
But the guys with, you know, the Canes and the Undertakers and, you know, the Rocks and so forth.
Some of those guys will get really mad if you do that.
Some will. I know Sabu, you know, at least the last time I, you know, talked to him, wouldn't answer to his real name.
Mm-hmm.
He was just,
well, that, you know, that's like his uncle. Yeah, the Sheik was that way.
What would you have to call the Sheik?
The Sheik?
The Sheik?
If he answered the phone at his home, mm-hmm. and if you said, is Eddie there, he'd say no. No, I'm not ruthless.
No,
that's
I believe
true.
You. I completely believe
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, that's, I mean, but again, like Lance says, you respect that.
Uh-huh.
You know, if somebody said, well, call me this or call me that, you know, Bob Armstrong was last week was on. His high school nickname was Pep. I picked that up from being around the family, and Gail, his wife, calls him that. And so I catch myself calling him Pep once in a while, and other people look and say, huh? But that, you know, again, but it's about familiarity, I think.
Right. Remember one time in ECW when Joel Gertner was getting married, he was going around the locker room asking people their names so he could invite them to their wedding, which I thought was hilarious. Inviting people to his wedding and they don't know their real names.
You know, speaking about names, I did primarily tag team wrestling during my 20 years in the ring, and you've done a lot. I don't know necessarily primarily, but a lot of yours. And I was thinking, wow, you were lucky like myself to have some. We talked about Jericho, but then you had PJ as a partner, you had Candido as a partner, and working with guys like that must have been a heck of a pleasure for you too.
Yeah, it really was. I got lucky because everyone that I did tag with, I enjoyed it tremendously. You know, I had William Regal and Christian as well in WWE, so like,
right.
I had a lot of great guys, and always guys that, you know, I seemed to gel with, you know, both physically and mentally, that we were always on the same page. You know, because there's some guys have just different philosophies, and I always seem to manage to have guys that, you know, wanted to do the same thing, and it was great.
You know, one thing I was wondering tonight, too, when I knew you were coming on, I remember when you first went to WCW, you got this big push, and I thought, my God, he's going to have to get somebody to carry his belts and awards, right? And then as fast as it started, it shut down. Did they give you any reason for that?
No.
No,
none whatsoever.
I don't even know why I bothered to ask.
Yeah. You know, it was just one of those things that was, you know, boom, 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 and then it was the one segment where Kevin Nash came out and gave me the big boot, and it was sort of a, oh, that's it for that.
What, tell us a little bit about Storm Wrestling Academy.
Well, after the, you know, I guess it was a year and a half that I'd been doing the training for World Wrestling Entertainment and OVW that I started looking into, again, other options to further get off the road. It was contract negotiation time, and we were, you know, talking over money, and I was debating with my wife, and she got to the point where she says, you know, one more year at the absolute most. She says, I've had my fill of you not being home. And so we started negotiating more and more, and as we were negotiating, we started to realize, you know what, I just assumed them actually say no to what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started, you know, crunching numbers and going, you know what, you know, we've always sort of talked about it. It's been in the back of my mind for probably the last, you know, 13 years. And so we just decided, you know what, it's right. Let's do this a go, and let's stay home, be a dad, be a husband, and still keep my feet in the wrestling industry somewhat and try to pass on what I've learned in 15 years.
We have a question from the chat room. I want to ask you some questions from there. Was Bulldog Bob Brown really tough to work with in the ring, as you so lovingly had said on your website? That's from Crusher Cox.
He certainly wasn't difficult in that, you know, you could go out there and have a match without too much problem. It was his way or the highway, which, you know, realistically speaking, with, you know, him having probably 25 years in the business at the time and me having, you know, one or two,
mm-hmm.
that's the way it should have been. I certainly didn't agree with a lot of the stuff that he wanted to do or he did, but it certainly wasn't difficult, and I still learned from him.
Mm-hmm. What do you...
Chops in the throat all the time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Les, are you there still?
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm listening.
I was just wondering. I didn't know if you were there or not. Okay. Can you tell us some memories about Chris Candido? You worked with him quite a bit.
Yeah, I did. I first met Chris in Smoky Mountain, obviously. He was, I think, the first guy from Smoky Mountain other than Jimmy that I did meet when Jericho and I were in to do our little negotiations with him. They took us to the gym, and Chris and Tammy were in there working out. And met him that first day and hit it off right away. Chris was just one of those guys that was all about having fun, all about, you know, being in the business and doing the best you could.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like from the first day you walked in, it was open arms like you had known him for 20 years. Just, you know, welcome and so glad you're here. And, oh, wow, now I can have, you know, great matches with this guy, too. It was never any of the other, you know, crap that you get in the business. It was always just, oh, great, more people to work with, more things to do. And hit it off with him, you know, right away. And fortunately did get to work with him a fair bit near the tail end of my Smoky Mountain run in tags against him and singles against him. And he was just so much fun to be in the ring with because it was all just about having fun, entertaining the crowd, entertaining the boys, and just, you know, loving wrestling. I don't think I've met anybody that loved actually doing this business as much as Chris.
Mm-hmm. Lawson wants to know if you consider your WCW run to be the most successful of your career.
It was certainly the, you know, biggest push I received, probably. You know, obviously the three-title run that I had there for the few months that I did, it was big. But I don't look at it like that, probably because it was such a short portion of my career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was only actually, I think I was employed for a year, but only on camera for about 10 months. So it wasn't really, you know, a big portion of my career. You know, I did 4.5, I think WWE was probably the most stationary I ever was. I was there for 4 years. And had, you know, the IC title run and the 4/2 tag runs, whichever you want to call them. So I think I did more in WWE, and I think I was a bigger part of ECW. But, you know, I think WCW was, you know, the most sort of intense, boom, here's a big push for a short period of time, and might be the most notoriety I got.
Did you enjoy working backstage at WWE?
Working backstage?
Yes.
I didn't really work backstage all that much. You mean when I was training?
Yes.
Yeah, I loved it. It's one of those things where, like, some people enjoy teaching and passing knowledge. I'm like, William Regal's big on that. He just loves the business, and anytime people ask questions, he likes to help them out.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're on the active roster, it's sort of a double-edged sword. That was something that, Chavo's dad mentioned the one time, saying every time you teach someone, he might take your spot. It's one of those things where there's a double-edged sword to it. And I think it was one of the reasons why when I was still on the active roster, I used to work with the Divas a lot because I enjoyed teaching and working with them, and they loved to learn. But, you know, as good as they got, they were never going to take my spot because we're two different spots.
I don't know, Lance. The way the business is evolving.
Yeah.
It is getting kind of creepy.
So it was really nice once I actually took myself off the active roster and out of that spot to go to OVW and work with guys and have no double-edged sword there. It's as much as they could take, as much as they could improve. I was doing my job. It was benefiting them and benefiting me. So it was really nice to have the freedom to just give everything you have to other people and see what they can do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Where my last, you know, 6 months to a year in WWE, I was sort of doing the same job in that I worked with a lot of the guys that were just getting brought up. And was being asked, you know, really show them the ropes, really try to help them out, try to bring as much as you can out of these guys. And it was frustrating in that you go out there and you work really hard, and if the matches go well and things do well, the other guy gets on TV.
Right.
And you stay not on TV. So it was very frustrating my last, you know, 6 months to a year. So when I pulled myself out of that spot and went to OVW, it was just so rewarding not to have that other baggage in the back of your mind going, you know, gee, if I can carry this guy to a really good match, he can get on TV instead of me.
Mm-hmm.
Where now it was just, man, if I can really get these guys to learn, it'll really look good for the company, it'll be great for them, it'll be great for me, and everybody wins.
Yeah. Now you get to do that a little bit closer to home.
Exactly. Closer to home is
a key. Talk a little bit about your training. Talk a little bit about training with Stu.
Oh, God.
Can you flex cross yourself and then tell me the story?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't train. Like, Stu was to the point, like, when I went through that, he was really, you know, not an active part of the training
right.
anymore. But it was still, whenever you did meet him, it was, hey, you know, come here, kid. And it was, you know, if you let him get a hold of you, then it was, you know, a whole
yes,
week of pain.
Yes, I do, though.
It's one of those things where it's nicer to stay about 4 feet away. Hey, Stu, how you doing? And just keep that arm's distance away.
He would just do that for no reason.
That's what he did, you know what I mean? It's like he loved, you know, that end of the business, and he loved, you know, putting guys through that. So it was like, that's what he lived for, was, hey, kid, come here. And it was, I'll show you something. Once you get a hold of your arm, you were done.
Give
it was just one of those things
back.
That you you stay that 4 foot distance away, and you show the respect. And, oh, Sue, great to see you, thank you, and you just keep that distance, and it's a whole lot easier.
Exactly. But what you did have in their training there was that feeling that it was Stu's training, his style, his. I mean, so it was probably more intense than it would have been somewhere else.
Quite probably, yeah. We really, you know, there was a lot of stretching involved, and there was a lot of discipline involved. I think, you know, over the years, a lot of his methods and stuff, you know, came from the Japan way of training things. And the respect for the business and the discipline that was involved was, you know, always key and was always there. And I think that's very important, which I plan to use in my own training.
You know what? I was just, you took the words out of my mouth. I was just going to say that because I know in the 12 years that I have been training people, that's, I think, the thing that's sorely missing from younger trainers is giving the discipline, the structure that it takes to be good in this business.
Yeah, because I was actually I was at a show up in Edmonton. There's a Prairie Wrestling Alliance at Edmonton. I was at the show, and there was a match, and it was a hardcore thing, and one guy started bleeding, so my wife and kids came back, and we're just in the back. It's not the locker room, but it was just sort of a green area where all the people were sitting. And it was, you know, there was 20 or 30 of the boys sitting there watching the show and stuff. And the only one that got up to offer a chair to my wife was Natty Neidhart.
Mm, wow.
And it was one of those things that you can tell she was brought in by Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. And was taught just some of the respect and some of the discipline involved. And she got up and carried the chair over and said, oh, you know, here, have a seat. My wife was like, no, it's okay. And she's like, well, I'll just leave it there in case you change your mind. And she went and sat on the floor. And it's like, you can tell the people that were brought into this business a little more old school in that, you know, there's a respect factor and there's a tradition in this business that should be kept.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, there's a lot of self-taught people or people who were never properly trained that are then training additionally. And I think a lot of the basics and a lot of fundamentals of the art of the sport are getting lost, but a lot of the respect and tradition as well. And unfortunately, they're too eager to run and they never learn to crawl. And there's a lot of stages along the way. And I think the truly well-rounded people in this business, the ones that you really enjoy watching, you know, 24/7, like the Benoits, the Guerreros, the Jericho, you know the list that I'm talking about.
Sure. Right.
They know how to crawl, they know how to walk, they know how to run. And, you know, they weren't taught a powerbomb and a moonsault their first month.
Mm-hmm.
And there's guys out there on the indie level, and I've seen them work, that, you know, do the double twisting moonsaults and the power bombs and the Germans throwing them on their head, but they don't even know how to do a headlock takedown properly.
Yeah.
And it's sad, and it's something that needs to be, you know, instilled in a future generation.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad to hear you say that because that's, you know, I've had people say, well, you keep guys in your gym longer than anybody, or a lot of people, longer than a lot of people before you put them out in front of them. I said, yeah, there's a reason, because I want them to be ready to go out there. I mean, I don't think there's any such thing as a timetable on when somebody's ready to have their first match in front of public.
No, and it's one of those things where, you know, if you take your time and do it properly, the reward will be a lot better in the long run.
That brings up a question from the chat room from Kristen. She said that you had trained with Jericho in Stu Hart's dungeon. Was he as flamboyant as he is now?
Oh, yeah, he was cheesy from day one. He really was. I love Chris, and he was cheesy as hell from the first day I met him.
He was still with all the juniors.
Oh, yeah, he had everything. He had the... He always walked to the beat of his own drum.
Oh, yeah.
And God bless him for that.
Tom from the UK, he said, Lance, how did you come across Pilates, and has it improved your physical health?
Actually, it was when I finally had my lower back problems properly diagnosed after seeing dozens of doctors.
Mm-hmm.
Actually read a diagnosis in a novel I was reading and followed it up and found out that there was a psoas muscle through my lower back and hips that was spasmed and causing an unnatural tilt in my pelvis. And I realized that I had to relax and get that worked out, but then also do a lot of core strengthening to stabilize my lumbar and my pelvis. And I had a massage therapist suggest Pilates for core strengthening. And I started doing that, went and picked up a DVD at Costco and felt like a moron picking up this little DVD. And all the time I was in Louisville, I'd sit in front of my TV and I'd do a 10-minute flexibility and a 10-minute ab core strengthening program from this DVD, and the difference was night and day.
Really?
I couldn't believe how little my back bothered me, and I got to the point where I was feeling pretty much 100% healthy again. And obviously, the improved flexibility was a huge help. but also just the stabilization of my lower lumbar. And, you know, night and day, it was a point where, you know, any front bumps before that was causing numbness down my legs and giving me all kinds of problems. And now I can pretty much do whatever I want, and
that's great.
Is it really good for your abs?
Yeah, I started actually getting a six-pack again for the first time in a while.
Yeah, I think Maven uses Pilates and for his abs, and now you can really see them.
Yeah, so it's actually, I think the core strengthening portion of it I'm actually probably going to use in the calisthenics warming-up process that we do for camp, because it's only a 10-minute thing, and if it can keep my tired old back in shape so I can bump, it'll probably be a good prevention thing for guys to do, because core stability and flexibility is something that'll really save you. I'm quite sure the flexibility is the only thing that kept Rob Van Dam alive for so long.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I liked when I was nosing around on your site was where you talk about weight training and nutrition and everything, is that you just don't, I mean, it's like, if you don't bring the intensity and you don't get in there and be serious about it and consistent, then it doesn't matter, drugs, no drugs, or what. If you're not doing the eating right, training right, then it doesn't work.
Yeah, that's something that I have battles here with, you know, other family members and stuff with the, you know, diets and diets. It's like, you know, you can't go on a diet. You have to actually just have a proper diet. It has to be a permanent lifestyle. You know what I mean? It's like a permanent part of your lifestyle has to be eating a certain way and getting a certain amount of exercise. And, you know, going on a diet for 8 weeks isn't going to do anything for anybody.
Well, you know, it's one of the things that I tell guys. I said, if you're a NASCAR racer, they're going to keep you fine-tuned. Otherwise, no matter how many horsepower you got, you can't utilize it.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I said, your body, it's the same thing. Body, your body is part of your product in this business.
A big part of it, yeah.
Now, you have a sister that's a pro wrestler, right?
That has been an on-running joke for about 3 or 4 years now. And I wish I could save the email of the first person that started it asking me that for some reason he thought there was a huge family resemblance between Victoria and I, if we're related. I thought it was the craziest thing I'd ever heard, so of course I told him it was absolutely true, we were twins.
Right.
And it just grew from there, and because everybody believes everything on the net is true, people would tune in, it's like, what, she's your sister? And it's one of the things that I said in the email as a joke was, well, that's why she doesn't use a last name, because they're trying to hide the fact. And everybody jumped on it that I was, you know, letting them in on this big kayfabe secret. And it was off and running from there.
And it goes to prove, you know, that you can't believe everything you read.
No.
Well, at least you got to get free meals at her new pizza restaurant down in Louisville.
Actually, I actually did have some pizza of hers before I left. My last night when the guys threw a bit of a party for me, they had something. It was really good.
Great.
Chris B. has a question. He wants to know if you think WWE dropped the ball with the ECW invasion angle back in 2001.
The WCW invasion?
Yes, the ECW invasion. He calls it the ECW. I don't think he's talking about the WCW portion of it, but when ECW got into it.
It was funny. I remember the night that they did it, that we did the whole, oh my God, the ECW turn, and it worked so well in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And then the tales later in the show, the last segment of the show, was when WCW and ECW was going to unite. And before we did it, because all the ECW crew came down from the upper bleachers, and they took us out, and we were riding up the elevator, and there was, you know, the group of however many there was of us in the elevator with Paul, and because I knew the WCW thing wasn't clicking really well, and the ECW thing did, and I remember turning to Paul, I said, you know what, I said, because he was all excited, yeah, this is really working, they're into it and everything else, I said, the WCW crew joins us, I said, it could change everything, and I think it did, but, you know, I think one of those things where you can question and you can say, oh, it should have been this way, it should have been that way, but it was really only certain cards you could have played, and I don't know what they could have done differently necessarily. Like, with the whole WCW thing, you had to go with it, but they didn't get enough of the big players and stuff to go with it full force, and it was really sort of a tough call, I think. And you know, maybe the ball was dropped, but I think it was a pretty slippery ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they could have gotten, you know, Flair, Bischoff, Steiner, NWO, and the original crew that we got in the invasion and did it all at once, I think it could have been amazing. But the fact that with all the different contracts and stuff that we only got certain guys at certain times, I think it really hurt it. So while I think it certainly could have been a much huger thing, I don't know if they had the cards to play it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think they're going to go anywhere else with this ECW thing now since the one-night stand pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Well, I I agree that they're probably not, other than perhaps maybe if, you know, I think the best case scenario might be an annual show. But I don't think you can bring it back full time. I really don't. You know, it's like you're going to yank the guys off your, you know, Raw and SmackDown that used to be in ECW and have them part of a lesser league or a different league. And it's one of those things where it's really hard to run ECW or anything as a profitable wrestling company anymore. A lot of people are, oh, they're throwing money away. ECW could make so much money. Even in its heyday, you know, it was struggling to stay above water.
Right.
And for WWE to, you know, get the TV time and put all the creative and all the other stuff into it to run it again, I don't think it's going to be buckets and buckets of money. You know, there might be enough popularity there to be putting, you know, 3,000 or even 5,000 people in the stands for house shows and stuff for it, but is that necessarily going to be buckets and buckets of more money than he's doing now with what he has? Vince knows WWE, and Vince has, you know, done pretty good by it, and trying to run another league, even if there is a core following that loves it, you know, I don't know if you can just restart something that was in the past.
Yeah, that's a good point. You were speaking earlier about reading about Pilates in a novel. You are an avid reader, right?
I'm a crazy reading machine.
what kind of books do you read? I mean, what kind of novels have you read lately?
I'm a big fan. Well, lately I've read like, you know, 50 books this year already.
Mm-hmm.
Some of my favorites. I've read a lot of Lawrence Block this year. I'm a big Lee Child fan. I've actually, T. Jefferson Parker has a book coming out in January, I believe, and I'm actually getting thanked in the acknowledgement page because I believe he has a character that, a bad guy in the book that used to be a wrestler but got thrown out of the industry, and he actually asked me for some advice on how this would be possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the details of the book. It was a question I asked her that I answered a year ago or two, and he said he's going to thank me in his acknowledgement page, so that'll be pretty cool.
Yeah.
And actually, I just finished William Regal's book, too, yesterday.
How was that?
Yeah.
Very, very interesting. It was such an open and honest book as far as his drug use and his drug problems, and it was a really, I think it's a book that, you know, anyone that's getting into this business or any entertainment business that has a, you know, obviously a drug black hole that they can fall into, it's a really good read and very educational. And the fact that he not only struggled and pulled his life out of the gutter, really, and is man enough to stand there and talk about it openly, I think it's, you know, tremendous for him, and I think it's a very educational read for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Have you thought yourself about writing?
I've thought about it, yeah. Actually, at one point in time before WCW was bought out by Vince, I actually had a tentative deal with a publisher out of Toronto to do my bio, so I actually had, well, I got about half the thing written already.
Excellent.
So if things go well and I manage to get a publisher behind it, I may, you know, get that out eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a lot of people with all of my reading and writing and stuff going on with my website have been encouraging me to have a go at actually writing a novel.
Yeah, because that's where the question came from. The commentaries are, they're so thought-provoking and they're really well-written.
Yeah, I actually started on a novel, you know, really, really just basic beginning stages of it. But I had a laptop die on me, and I lost it. So I will get back to it at some point. I don't know if I have enough to get an actual full book out, but I think I will try. You know, once I get Storm Wrestling Academy up and I, you know, get everything organized, so I've got all the my, you know, T's crossed and my I's dotted and stuff, I'll probably sit back and have a go at it again.
Mm-hmm.
But I really enjoy, you know, a good story, and be it a wrestling match or a book, they're all good stories if they're told properly, and I think the similarities also, too, lend well together. I know I talked to Mick Foley a lot when he was around promoting his books and stuff, because we've talked about books a lot with Mick,
mm-hmm.
and he uses that, too, you know, his ring psychology as far as how you tell a story and take a crowd or a reader or a watcher, whatever you want to call them, on an emotional journey, and he says he uses that even when he writes his novels. He says, you know, you realize that, you know, the reader is at a certain point and needs a change of pace. And there's a lot of similarities there as far as telling a good story. So maybe I'll have it in me to get a novel out.
I want to go back to the Storm Wrestling Academy. Is there any is there anything that you're going to have emphasis on as far as in-ring work, things like that?
I think the most important thing is getting the fundamentals and the basics at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also, too, is something that I stressed, because I actually was teaching for the Hearts when PJ went through here. just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that I instilled in him or really focused on, it's one of those things where it's very important to be easy to work with,
yes.
Especially nowadays trying to get jobs.
Right.
Like, there's guys that, you know, they might have really great matches, but they're difficult to work with or they're not really all that pleasant to work with. And being extremely easy and being more about the match and the scope of things instead of worrying about getting, you know, your stuff in and stuff like that, I think really lends well to getting booked. It's one of those things where you get booked a lot word of mouth, and if, you know, you go to an indie match and work with somebody and it's just like pulling teeth, and then you go somewhere else and the guy says, oh, we're looking to book somebody else, that guy's never going to get mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're someone that, man, that was easy, that was great, it was so much fun, and then you go to Japan somewhere, oh, we're looking to book somebody. Oh, I was just working with this kid. He's actually really great. And I think word of mouth is very powerful in this business, and I think being someone that people like to work with and being somebody that's easy to work with is really important. And I think that's a lot of the cases why I ended up getting booked in a lot of places. I know when Jericho, when I first broke in, we were doing the debate, you know, what's more important, how good you are or who you know. And it's funny looking back because I remember telling him at the time, I said, well, we'll know for sure because I know absolutely nobody in this industry now. If I make it anywhere, it's because I'm good, not because I know anybody.
Right.
And it's funny, I got a lot of jobs from people I knew.
Right.
Like Jericho got me a lot of breaks and Dragon and different people. But the reason I knew them was because I was easy to work with.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things where it's the first time you meet somebody, if you make a good impression in the ring, there'll be somebody that'll go to bat with you for you.
You know.
And it's like Chris Benoit has been so much help with me getting my academy started. He's been, you know, just going out of his way, anything I can do. And it's not that I knew Chris beforehand and we were buddies because we hung out in school or anything. It was just we've crossed paths in wrestling, and I think he has a respect for my view of the industry, and Benoit's all about what's good for the business.
Yes.
And the paths you cross and the guys that enjoy working with you are the guys that will be opening the doors for you later. So it may be, you know, who you know might be a big part of it, but it all goes back to how good you are, and then the people you know will open those doors for you.
Yeah, and it seems a shame, but a lot of these, a lot of the training centers have to teach etiquette.
Yeah, well, that's part of the, you know, but the respect thing, as Lance will tell you, part of it you're taught when you're in the ring.
Right.
Is the respect thing. I want to tell a real quick story of what he's saying about being easy to work with. And to me, and I think Lance will agree a lot, that when you're complimented by your peers, it's the nicest compliment you can get. When I was probably 3 years in the business and was still just learning my craft and doing jobs, I was doing the Windsor, Ontario TV. And Mark Lewin came in, who was being used as a star at the time. You know, he was working on top. And had had a virus or anyway, had been sick and wasn't feeling well. And he asked who he was working with, and he was told so-and-so, and he said, oh, and he looked around the room, and he said, let me work with Thatcher. And I've told guys, I said, that was in 1963,
mm-hmm.
And I still remember that, because here is a guy, as a top guy, what he's saying is, he'll take care of me, let me work with him.
Right.
And to me, that's, I mean, like Lance says, that means more sometimes than your size or your look.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, too, where, you know, if Mark Lewin went somewhere else and they were looking for somebody that, oh, we're looking for somebody that fits this bill, and it's like if you fit that bill, you say, hey, you know, that Thatcher kid really took care of me.
Yeah.
And it pays down the road, and it is the greatest compliment because with wrestling being the nature that it is, you know, you don't have the win-loss record to prove you're good.
Mm-hmm.
And the respect to your peers and stuff like that. I remember one time in the ECW locker room when Tommy Rogers was coming back after neck surgery. We were shorthanded on a show somewhere, and Paul said, Tommy, are you able to go yet? Oh, Paul, I don't think I'm really ready. He says, well, you're going to work with Lance. He said, oh, okay. Went and got his boots.
Yeah, that's a compliment.
And that's a compliment. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, Tommy and I went out there, and we had a great match, and it was, you know, the most important thing in the match. Okay, Tommy, you've got a bad neck. What can we do? What can't we do?
Mm-hmm.
And he knew I'd take care of him, and I did, and he was great to work with.
We got a question in the chat room, NTAF. He wants to know if you keep in touch with a wrestler that you trained in the early 90s called Starbuck.
Okay. I didn't work with anybody or train anybody by the name of Starbuck back then. I think it's his name's Mike Marshall when he was here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I traded. He's a guy from Finland, actually.
Right.
So yeah, sings in a rock band and wrestles. I do keep in touch with him. He actually just sent me a DVD of one of his recent matches. Yeah, he was ring announcing here when I probably had 3 or 4 years in the business. and wanted to have a match and get trained a little bit. So I trained with him a little bit, not formal training, just, you know, when the ring was up, got in with him for an hour or two here and there and gave him his first match. And he's in Finland now, but we trade emails and stuff. I still keep in touch for sure.
Okay. We're going to, we're running out of time. We're going to have to get out of here, but I want you to tell everybody how they can join Storm Wrestling Academy, where you can get more information on the training center.
StormWrestlingAcademy.com is the first and easiest step to get information, and you can email me at StormWrestlingAcademy@shaw.ca. That, again, is all on the website. And you can get trained in the wrestling capital of the world, Calgary.
Excellent.
Alberta, Canada.
All right. By Lance Storm, no less.
Exactly. Lance, good luck to you with your school, and I know you're going to do it right, and if I can ever be of any help, let me know.
Thank you, Les. I appreciate that.
All right. Lance Storm here on Wrestling Weekly. We got to be cutting out of here. I got to remind you guys, if you want to check up on what Les is doing all week and where he's going to be, you can check that out at lesthatcher.com and epwt.com. Les is going to be in Denver, Colorado this weekend.
That's coming weekend, right, for Altitude Pro Wrestling, and come on out and join us.
That's right. SummerSlam is coming on, guys, so enjoy the pay-per-view. We'll be back with you next week. Our featured guest next week will be B.G. James, of course, the son of Bob Armstrong, who we had on last week, also known as the Road Dog. He's going to be our special guest next week. So tune in, 6 p.m. Eastern. We're going to be cutting out of here,
and
guys.
And I'll be doing the first hour of the show live from Denver.
That's right.
There you go.
All right. So.
All right, guys. So everybody's head to SummerSlam, and, Doc, I'll be talking to you before the next week.
All right.
Take care, everybody.
Good night, everybody.